It's happy birthday.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to match your wits against those of a quartet of quizzical authorities. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will give you $10 in war stamps. If the question is must, Lucky Strike gives you a total of a $50 war bond, plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now, light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, Information, Please, its unchained, spontaneous, and unrehearsed self, presents tonight as its quartet of authorities, Franklin C. Adams and John Kieran, and as our guests, the arsenic and old lace, life with father maestro, Mr. Russell Krause, together with Mr. James Gleason. No, wait a minute, you don't look like James Gleason.
Who said I was?
Well, how'd you get here, then?
Jimmy Gleason sent me in to pinch hit for him.
Well, now that you're here, I guess he'd better take you. There's no use holding out on you, folks. Jimmy Gleason was snowed under this week, and Ned Sparks, the famous gloomy comic, is going to bat for him, come weal, come woe. I suppose it'll be come woe.
Twice. 27.
Okay, here we go. This one comes from Ruth Harjett of Charlotte, North Carolina. Where in literature are these lines repeated at frequent intervals? Now, they're going to give you three lines. Get 2 out of 3. There's no discharge in the war. Where would you find that line repeated frequently, Miss Adams?
In Kipling.
In Kipling and in what poem? Pick a poem.
I think Adam. Boots.
Boots is right. Yes. Boots, 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 and so forth, moving up and down again. There's no discharge in the war. How about the phrase, hats off? Hats off. Where would you find that?
Hats off, the flag is passing by.
Yes, the famous poem, The Flag Goes By, does anyone know who wrote that?
No.
Have we all recited it in school?
H.C. Bennett.
H.H. Bennett.
I know it began with an H.
Yeah, well, that's not far away.
Can he see that card from here?
I guess he can just see the H part of it. And how about this one? Yes, siree, yes, siree, yes, siree, yes, siree. Where would you find that, Mr. Krause?
Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones.
Yes, right. From the musical review, Sing Out the News. There's Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones, who can't be a dud or a stick in the mud when he's Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones. That gives us 3 out of 3. And, Mr. Sparks, do you get the general idea?
Yes, indeed.
All right, you haven't made a mistake so far. You're okay. Now, just hang on. Here we are with a question from Genevieve Womack of Maywood, Illinois. Now, gentlemen, suppose you were directing and you wanted actors with plenty of experience in their roles. Whom would you cast for the following part? Let's get 3 out of 4 on this. Suppose you wanted to cast a butler. Whom would you choose? Mr. Krause?
Well, I'd pick Arthur Treacher.
Arthur Treacher would be very good.
Especially if I wanted a funny butler.
A very funny butler. There might be others, but Arthur Treacher has made a great success in the butling business. How about, suppose you wanted to cast someone as a rustic American hero in a movie or play. Whom would you choose, Mr. Sparks?
Walter Houston.
Walter Houston would be very good. Might choose some others. Mr. Krause, any other ideas?
Well, Gary Cooper.
Gary Cooper?
Sure.
Either one of those. Suppose you had the problem of casting a grandmother. How would you handle that? Yes, Mr. Sparks.
May Robeson.
May Robeson would be fine. Jane Darwell might be very good. Dame May Whitty. Any one of those would be excellent. And suppose, this is a setup. Suppose you wanted to cast a sourpuss. Doesn't say how far. Mr. Adams?
I just walked out. I wouldn't know any. I don't know any such people.
Well,
don't
be... Well, from now on...
Don't be silly, Adams. You can play it yourself.
I don't think you do half as good a job, though, as the right answer, Mr. Krause, which is what?
Mr. Ned Sparks.
Mr. Ned Sparks, yes. One of the finest of living sourpusses.
I thought he was just a sweet fellow.
And you know, behind that gloomy facade, Frank, you know what there is?
A soft heart.
No, a gloomy facade. Here's one from Gertrude Meredith in New York City. Here's an army question. What's meant in the army by a commissioned officer and a non-commissioned officer. Now, we see those phrases constantly. What do we mean by them, Mr. Tierney?
Well, a commissioned officer has a commission from the War Department.
Well, who actually signs the commission?
Well, the Secretary of War is supposed to, but generally a
President of the United States.
Oh, President of the United States.
But generally,
right.
It's a lieutenant colonel.
Well, I think the commission actually does come from the president, Mr.
Comes from the president.
I think so. Now, how about a non-commissioned officer?
That's anybody from a second lieutenant down.
Well, it isn't a question of grade so much as the...
Who signs it?
Yes, as who actually...
That can be signed
it.
Within the regiment.
Yes, by the commanding officer of the unit. That's quite right. Now, what's the difference between a staff officer and a line officer? It's here in our military authority.
Well, a staff officer is on the staff of the commander of any unit, and he does not have immediate command of troops himself. For instance, a major may be a line officer, or he may be a staff officer. For that matter, a second lieutenant may be a staff officer. But a staff is a sort of a board of directors that passes its orders to line officers what shall be done with regard to the...
And the line officers do the actual commanding of men in a unit. The staff officer is administrative or executive, perhaps, in his capacity. And now here's one that... I bet most of us would be stumped on the difference between the United States Army and the Army of the United States. They sound very similar. Anybody care to take a chance on that?
I don't know. I saw both of those on abbreviations, and I didn't know the difference myself.
Would you like to learn now?
Yes, sir? I would.
Well, I guess you'd have to ask me. Nobody else seems to know.
Well, how about that, boy?
All right, I'll tell you. The United States Army, gentlemen, is the regular Army. The members are all professional soldiers. But the Army of the United States is the whole Army that includes selective servicemen, reserve officers, National Guard, anybody who's in service for the duration of the war. And that's a very definite technical distinction. Is that clear now, Mr. Adams?
That's clear. In the last war, that was known as the National Army.
As the National Army, now known as the Army of the United States. All right, that gives us 2 out of 3. Now, how about this one from Mrs. A.C. Greer of Elizabeth, New Jersey? It's a very simple musical question. You're going to hear 3 songs played. Each of the songs asks a question. What's the question? Let's have the first. Mr. Price.
Will you love me in December as you do in May by James Walker?
There you go. Yes, that's quite right. Let's come back to you, Mrs. Fox.
Very forcibly.
I have a feeling you knew it, and we're just being courteous to Mr. Krause, who is not used to it.
I wanted to give him a chance.
I know. He'll take advantage, too, I'll tell you. Now let's have the second one. Mrs. Fox is giving that one to Mr. Krause again.
Are you having any fun, Mr. Fox?
He doesn't want to step out of character, Mr. Krause. Yes, that's it. Are you having any fun? And now the third and last. It's a very pretty little thing, but I can't let it go on all evening. Mr. Adams, any ideas?
No, sir, never heard of it.
Well, let me tell you about the United States Army and the Army of the United States, then. Maybe we ought to go back to that one. What's the matter with you fellows? And it's very simple.
I want it to go on all evening.
Who'll buy my violets? It is. Who'll buy my violets? Mr. Sparks, come back to you this time?
Not that one, no.
Well, you see, there's no sense in giving it to Mr. Krause. Doesn't come back to him either. We got 2 out of 3 on that. Here's one from Ruth May Nell of Belrose, New York. Now, gentlemen, here's the setup. A number of packages arrive in a dead letter office. And they contain these objects that I'll name in ordinary English or in appropriate slang. What's the probable occupation of the owner of each group of objects? Is that completely unclear? You get that, Mr. Kieran Spark? Okay. Here's the first set of objects. Come to the dead letter office. 3 bag, box cars, housewife. Who owns them? 3 bag, box cars, housewife. What's the occupation of the person that owns these, Mr.
Kieran? It might be a soldier.
It is a soldier. How do you know?
Well, 3 bag would be his sleeping equipment, and box cars would be his shoes, and what was the other thing?
Housewife.
That's the sewing kit.
That's right. That's perfect. tell me, Mr. Kieran, was that slang used in the last war?
Oh, I think 3 bag was used in the Napoleonic campaign. With reason.
And they must have the same slang now. Now, here's another thing.
Boxcars, I thought that was dice.
So did I.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
I was going to say a dice shooter.
Is that what threw you off? That's but you couldn't set him
Bill might be a soldier.
How about this? Here are some objects left in a dead letter office. Professor, Queen, Creel. Who owns them? Professor, Queen, Creel. Mr. Adams?
A fisherman.
Fisherman, how do you know that?
Because the Creel is a fisherman's outfit, and I don't know about the others, but that's just a little bit.
Mr. Clark, do you got any ideas on this?
The Creel is the basket in which he carries his fish, and the second was what?
Professor and Queen.
The professor is a fly, well known to trout fishermen. And the third?
Queen.
The Queen.
Queen.
Well, there are two or three flies that the name Queen appear in. May Queen.
I'll take the other Queen for granted.
I thought it was the girl he took fishing with.
Well, look here, Mr. Clark. Let me tell you, you don't seem to get the idea of this little jamboree. If you know the answer, you don't let Adams get the credit.
Well, I just assume I'm studying his method, you see.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to credit Adams and Sparks with this as kind of a duet. Is that all right with you, Frank?
Yeah, you get an assist. Yeah,
you get an assist. Okay. Now, here's another set of objects. Who owns them? Soup, gloves, a can opener, flashlight. Got several hands on that. What's that?
A safe cracker.
A safe cracker. How do you know?
Soup, I think, is nitroglycerin.
You bet.
Gloves are gloves, I imagine.
I think you've got something there.
What's the next one?
Can opener.
Can opener is a bar or a jimmy or some device for getting into a safe.
Yeah.
Ratchet drill.
And Mr. Spar?
I don't think it's now the glove part of it. When I used to blow safes, I never used gloves.
Didn't you did it with your gloves off?
Oh, yes. That's we didn't bother with gloves in those days.
That's why you got caught.
Did you use a flashlight?
No, we didn't have any.
Life must have been more exciting in those days.
Well, officer, there's your man.
Well, Jaeger, a cracksman, is quite the right answer on that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cross is on vacation. So Mr. Basil Rysdale, in his stead, quotes in full one of the shortest speeches on record. It was known as King Edward VII's best after-dinner speech.
Well, the king said simply, quote, "Gentlemen, you may smoke," end quote. And gentlemen, and ladies too, you can easily see why that speech made a hit. Today, as always, the enjoyment of tobacco, fine tobacco, is one of the good things of life. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. If you yourself visited tobacco auctions anywhere in the South, you'd see us bidding in open competition and paying the price to get the milder, better quality Lucky Strike tobacco. The independent tobacco experts who are present at every auction see these facts for themselves. Yes, year after year, at market after market, they see Lucky Strike consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. So with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Mr. Fadiman, since every smoker knows that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts, aren't these facts worth acting on?
Action certainly calls for, Mr. Rysdale, and like King Edward himself, you deserve compliments for brevity, just 58 seconds. We go on with a question from Mrs. Hugh Tunstall of Norfolk, Virginia. What feature stories, gentlemen, would you expect to read in almost all newspapers on the following dates every year? On the first date of February 2nd. Mr. Adams.
That is Candlemas or Groundhog Day, and you would find a story usually attempting to be comic about the shadow of the groundhog.
That's right. What is
six days, 6 weeks more of winter or not, as the case may be.
And how far back does that journalistic tradition go, Mr. Adams, of writing that story on?
408 B.C.
Goes all the way back.
Daylight saving.
How about March 31st? Mr. Adams again.
You mean in the morning papers or the evening papers?
Let's see. I don't think it would matter very much, morning or
March
evening.
31st, you would find a day about a story about April Fool's Eve.
Yes, you'd find it as in the form of a warning, I guess, to beware of April Fool's Eve.
But that is not the answer.
Why not?
Is it?
Yeah, that's the answer I have. You're all right, Mr.
Well, I blundered on something big.
But generally, you're going to
I'm going to say the same thing.
Yeah. How about July 15th? What feature story would you read on July 15th? And I don't know whether it's afternoon or evening, Adam.
St. W. Swithin.
St. W. Swithin. Now, tell us all about it. Tell us all about it, Mr. Allen.
Well, that's supposed to be, if it rains that day, I forget how many, something like 40 more days of rain.
Exactly like it. 40 more days of rain. And suppose it's fair on St. Swithin's Day. Then what?
Okay.
Okay. Very good. How about this one from Gertrude M.
How do I know those?
Adams, you're amazing this evening. And don't you think he's amazing, Mr. Swan?
He astonishes me.
Yes, he's amazing.
Constantly.
Same to you, Tugger.
It's a hastily contrived friendship. Here's one from Gertrude M. Fawcett, Plainfield, New Jersey. Identify the work in which the following are accomplished through spells or hypnotism. Here are some situations. A girl is put into a long sleep for disobeying her father. Where would you find that situation, Mr. Sheeran?
It's in the Sleeping Beauty, isn't it?
I don't think the Sleeping Beauty disobeys her father, does she? No, I don't remember the Sleeping Beauty. Mr. Krause, you look worried.
I'm very worried. I haven't the slightest an idea, but I know it rings a bell somewhere.
Look of worry is the nearest thing to a look of reflection on your face. it's from Die Walküre. Brunhilde is put into a long sleep for disobeying her father.
I was asleep that night at the show.
I don't know how you could be with that noise going on.
Well, if it's the opera, long or short, the sleep seems long. Now, in the second situation, if you got that wrong, ought to get the next two right. A laundress is transformed into a coloratura. No progress. Mr. Kieran.
That would be Trilby by Du Maurier.
Yes, that's the situation in Du Maurier's famous word, Trilby. Now, in the third, we have a dishonest district attorney who is prevented from committing a murder, and hypnotism is involved there. Where would you find that situation? A dishonest district attorney prevented from committing a murder. Who prevents him in what, Mr. Adams?
The witching hour.
That's right. The witching hour. You get more and more amazing every time.
I happen to see that play.
Do you remember it, Mr. Park?
I was Russell Thomas.
Mm-hmm. I was in it.
Well, if you were in it, Mr. Spock, you apparently are still under the spell.
I am indeed. I'm unconscious.
Well, what was the situation in that, Mr. Spock?
I don't recall that. I played in that play 35 years ago in Chicago.
And slept right through it.
Mr. Adams?
I think it was John Mason who said to the district attorney, he was a district attorney, and said to somebody, you can't shoot that gun. You can't even hold that gun. And buckety-buckety, he dropped it. You see, he don't know.
That's approximately what it was, all the same. I bet it wasn't 35 years ago for Adams. But that was no more than 33, 34 years ago for you, Mr. Adams. That's correct. That gives us 2 out of 3. Here's one from Harry M. Davis of this city. A military question. Would the United States be more likely to send forces to protect or to attack the following islands? The first island is Pribilof, Pribilofs. I have two hands. Mr. Krause?
I think they would attack now if the recent word of someone from up in Alaska away that the Japs have occupied that island.
That particular one? How recent was the word?
Oh, I could say a week or so ago.
There was word of a Japanese investment of a couple of islands, but Pribilof was not among them. These are still American islands southwest of Alaska.
Those are the Great Seal Islands.
Pardon?
Great Islands for Seals.
Great Islands for Seals.
S-E-A-L. For Seals.
We might want to protect those, too.
May I bring you a clipping next week and show it to you?
All right. I may be wrong on that. As far as I know, we would protect the Pribilof Islands. That's a stick to it. Now, how about the island of Honshu? Would we attack or protect the island of Honshu? H-O-N-S-H-U. Mr. Kieran.
I think we would attack that. I think that's Japanese held.
Yes. We would and we will attack the main island of Japan, on which Tokyo, for example, is temporarily located. The island, gentlemen, of Attu, at A-T-U, and Rat, R-A-T. Mr. Kieran.
I think we would attack them. Those are 2 of the 3 islands that the Japs have occupied in the Aleutian group.
Yes, that would be quite right. Now, Mr. Krause, I may have to apologize next week if my information on Pribilof is wrong. But as far as I know, that is still in American hands.
Well, one of us will apologize.
I'm more used to it. That gives us 2 out of 3. So far, we have a perfect record. How about this one from Howard F. Shout of Detroit, Michigan? Give a line of poetry that might appropriately be quoted by the following people. One that might be quoted by a shoemaker, for example. Any line of poetry that might be appropriate coming from the mouth of a shoemaker.
A cobbler, for example. Any ideas, Mr.
Oh, he might stick to his last.
Well, yes.
Last will be first.
It's not a line of verse.
Oh,
Mr. Adams, Mr. Curie?
The last of things for which the first was made.
That's a far fetch.
Well, you can sneak it in, can't you?
Mr. Adams?
One, two, buckle my shoe.
That would be all right, Mrs. Clark.
I was about to say that's a very good question. Can I have two guesses?
Sure.
One for me and one for Gleason.
All right. He'd appreciate it. Now, the next one, next part, next is very easy. What would a baker say? A line of poetry that might be quoted by a baker. Yes, Mr. Adams?
Tell me where is fancy bread.
Oh. That's beautiful. You know, Sparks is still amazed at you. He's amazer and amazer.
Any child could do it, Sparks.
I know, but Sparks is too old. How about a locksmith? Mr. Kieran.
Well, love laughs at locksmiths.
I don't know whether it's a line of verse. It's a proverb, all right. It is a line of verse?
No.
Don't think so. How about another? Oh, famous one. I'll give you a hint. It's from To Althea from Prison by Lovelace, I think.
Oh, how about Stonewall.
Stonewall, yes. Do not a prison make, nor iron bar a cage. See if I can stump you on this one from Mrs. Ruth Grossman in New York. With whom or what do you associate the following? These sound a little alike. Cross garters, cross switch, cross checks. Cross garters, you associate, Mr. Kieran, with whom?
With W. Shakespeare and Malvolio, the butler in Twelfth Night.
Yes, he's a little better than a butler.
Yes, he's a general factotum.
Yes, sort of a major domo. Why do you associate cross garters with him?
Well, they put up a joke on him told him that it'd be nice if he'd wear cross garters and please the lady who was his boss.
Yeah, and it got him into a ridiculous scrape. Now, how about cross switch? What would that mean to you? Cross switch. Mr. Sparks?
I'll have nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do. You like that question, too? I just want to see whether you like our questions.
Not that. You mean a railroad term?
No, I don't think so. Although I think cross switch is a railroad term, as a matter of fact. Isn't that a sort of a frog-like arrangement?
Well, crossover switches.
Yeah?
Cross switch?
Cross switch.
Patch, yes.
No, I haven't got cross patch. Next week, Mr. Adams, we will have cross patch.
I give up. It might be a bond.
No, it's something that is a good idea for all of us to learn. It's a practice that all motorists should use, the changing their tires, you know, from the right front to the left rear, and left front to the right rear, and vice versa, so that the wear is even and complete on all sides. Okay, Mr. Adams? All right. That gives us one wrong and leads us on to cross-checks. Cross-checks, Mr. Kieran.
Well, Mr. Sparks ought to know that. It's used in a Canadian game. And
Mr. Sparks, how about
Canada?
Hockey? Hockey, yes. All you have to say is a Canadian game, and he leaps to it. what are, or is, cross-checks?
Well, it's something indulged in by militant young men to assassinate each other. They bump each other with malice aforethought.
Malice?
Malice. Deal.
Yeah, it's a method of defensive play. You're playing a very offensive man. And now that gives us 2 out of 3. And before we go on to the next question, Mr. Rysdale points out that a baseball player has to be pretty good to win Mr. Kieran's approval, and a rhyme more than passing fair to please Mr. Adams.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, to win the approval of experts in any field requires a really distinguished performance. This is outstandingly true of the independent tobacco experts, buyers, auctioneers, and warehousemen. At auctions all over the South, these experts see just who buys what tobacco, and the price is paid. So their overwhelming 2-to-1 preference for Lucky's, the independent expert's stamp of approval, is your best assurance of distinguished performance in a cigarette. For make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And clearly, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. As market after market, year after year, we consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder Lucky Strike tobacco. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Why not profit by the experience of these men who spend their lives buying, selling, and handling tobacco? Yes, why not smoke the smoke tobacco experts smoke?
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale. It took just 60 seconds. And now a question from Mrs. Laura Springston of Modesto, California. I want you to recite for us one case in Mother Goose where the wrongdoer meets retribution, gets his proper desserts, and one where he gets away with it. Now, one where he meets retribution, a wrongdoer of some sort. Any ideas, Mr. Adams?
Well, there I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers. I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
Yes, that would be a very good one. Mr. Kerr, do you have another in mind?
Wait, I went to Taffy's house. Yeah. Taffy wasn't dead. I picked up a broomstick and hit him on the head.
I think it's beast.
He stole a leg of beef.
Mr. Sparks, did any come to you?
These men astonish me. I'm dumb. There's nothing I can say.
Would you
they should be in the show business, and I should be mussing around the sports.
Well, what do you think this is? This is show business. They've been in it for years. Would you do something for me, Mr. Sparks?
With pleasure.
All right, I just want to see whether that face can say a rhyme from Mother Goose. Any rhyme at all.
No. I would phone Gleason, though. He'd be right over.
I'd love to have you there. Oh, well, maybe you can give us the next one. A case in Mother Goose where a fellow commits a wrong and gets away with it. That's harder. How about that? Any ideas?
Come on, boys. Come on.
We never had this much encouragement before. Well, I'll give you one. Mr. Kieran?
Well, Hickory Dickory docked him. I'll find up the clock. He ran down. Nothing happened to him.
I don't think it was a crime, exactly.
Well, it might have been a sign forbidden.
Might have been. You're building
yeah,
this.
For a mouse, that was a crime. Yeah. That's no place for a mouse.
How about it, Mr. Adams?
King of Hearts.
How about it? Did what? No, I... Matter of fact, I think...
Jack of...
Oh,
or Jack of Stolen Hearts. Yeah, with them ran away. Yeah.
Never got punished?
Apparently, never was apprehended.
Oh, if that's true, then okay.
They're still looking for
you. You win on that. How about this one from Milton Moore of Astoria, Long Island? Unravel the following bit of talk that I will now try to give you in my best Brooklynese. Everything's Jake. I knocked the Dick Billy down with me, Roscoe, and land with the Benny. What does it mean, Mr. Krause?
Well, everything's all right.
Yeah?
I knocked the detective's... What?
Billy.
His club down with my... revolver.
Yeah.
Land
with the Benny.
And land with the overcoat.
Yeah. What does land mean? Perhaps you don't
land.
Know. A ranch.
Oh, I thought you knew.
I thought you knew.
This man is an underworld character.
You didn't realize. Well, that's all we have time for. Thanks, Mr. Krause and Mr. Sparks, for joining in the fun tonight. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest. Tonight, we make a brilliant announcement. Lucky Strike has paid out no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica and no $50 war bond. Yes, you should have muffed a couple of times. And speaking of bonds, you folks might be interested to know what your investment in bonds is doing for you. 10 cents, for example, will buy 5 cartridges. 50 cents will buy oil to run a destroyer 1 mile. $5 will buy a Navy life ring that may save the life of someone you love. And $351,000 bonds pay for one of the heavy bombardment planes that bring victory nearer. Now, next week, we'll have with us the Levant Adams Kieran combination, plus Dr. Mildred H. McAfee, president of Wellesley College, who has recently been appointed lieutenant commander of the Women's Naval Reserve Corps. Good enough. Send letters, remember, with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.